Your heart beats faster and faster.
Performing a well-planned-out smash and grab on the paranormal community. This is the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Oh, that's right, Paranormal Broadcasting, where we take it one day at a time and then just look back to see what happened.
Hey, gang, we are back live in studio, and we're in the G&D chat room all night long.
That's right. I'm a little thrown off here, Sean. Hold on. You can log into that chat room. It's going to be a temporary chat room tonight. If you've already logged in, go back to our webpage. Go back to the webpage.
Go back.
And go down to chat room and click on it at www.ghostanddemon.com. That will, you'll see temp chat room. Log into the temp chat room tonight.
The temp one. And this is the Ghostman, Sean B.
That would make me Nathan S., a.k.a. the Demon Hunter.
And that would make this the March 22nd broadcast of our little show.
Oh, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show is independently produced by Nathan Schoonover and Sean Burris and is broadcast live on, well, not tonight, Omnisound, but normally Omnisound, Absurd Radio, Planet Paranormal. Well, Planet Paranormal uses our Omnisound network. So tonight we're broadcasting on Absurd Radio, and we're recorded for Planet Paranormal, Para X Radio, and the Black Vault Radio Network.
There you go. Is that it?
That's it, yeah.
All right, guys. Tonight's guest, Reverend Tim Shaw, hosted the Black Cat Lounge Radio Hour, also a member of the Paranormal Awareness Society Corporation. He's going to stop by to talk what's going on, what's the latest happening in the paranormal community with the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show tonight.
That's right. The Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show is beyond the normal broadcast, and it starts right. Now.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Original Bad Boys of Paranormal, and your host for tonight's show, Ghostman and Demon Hunter.
Yes.
Welcome back.
I tell you, man, I need a double shot tonight. It's,
Double shot!
I'm on the edge. I went down to Butthead's Tobacco Emporium this week in Danbury, Connecticut, and, they had some of my favorite cigars there, so I grabbed some Drew Estate The Edge, and I think it was a bad omen because now I'm on the edge.
We're living on the edge. It's a good song.
And I didn't get to do my opening line because Sean screwed me.
No, I did. Let's do it now. I got it in my notes, actually.
I had a great opening line, and he screwed me.
No. I got it in my notes. I was actually going to say it, that... We should be broadcasting live from a van down by the river.
To which my answer was going to be, it was three aces. I had three aces. Who wouldn't go all in with three aces, okay? I had two pocket aces and an ace on the flop. It's not my fault.
You know what? Listen. If you're a recovering anything, do not listen to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show, because we got alcoholism, everything you can think of, plus gambling now. Nathan brings that to the show. So,
wanted to make sure we were well-rounded there, you know? I wanted to make sure we were well-rounded.
This is like paranormal intervention. I mean, this is like the stuff you got to go through before you can start hunting ghosts. You got to drop the gambling. You can't be gambling at the clients' houses, stuff like that.
You never know. If the ghost was a gambler, it might work.
That's true. That's true. It could work, especially out of Tombstone, places like that where the Cowboys used
to... Hey, I'm telling you, Sean, you and I ever investigate down at Tombstone, I'm bringing a deck of cards.
Oh, definitely.
We're playing definitely. Down there. Even if we're not going to find a ghost, I'm playing cards with in the same seat that Doc Holliday used to sit in. Although,
could you imagine doing that in the Birdcage Theater, playing a game of poker down the basement?
I got to tell you, though, I was always a bit more of a fan of Wyatt Earp than I was. Because you know I'm a Law & Order kind of guy.
Right. Well, you wouldn't want to be a fan of Wyatt Earp then.
Well, so he was a bit of a... The man was a bit of a bully. I'll give it that.
Okay,
you know, he wasn't so much a bully as he was firm on the law.
He was a peacemaker.
He was a peacemaker, just like the gun.
That's right. And he had the gun, and I want to go to Tombstone. I know it's a very haunted location, and I've always wanted to go there. I just can't imagine playing poker in the basement of the Birdcage Theater. It might happen for us, Demon Hunter. You never know.
You never know. We might get down there. If we do, we'll record it so that you can hear it here.
Heck, we'll send it out live, guys, because that's what we
I don't know if they anyway. I don't know if they have internet in the Birdcage Theater.
I doubt it. I doubt it. And it's a place named Tombstone. I doubt they have live internet feeds from there. But anyway, I want to take this opportunity.
Wait, before are you going into the news? Because before you go into the news.
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. Then go. Tell me what you're taking the opportunity for.
Well, I'm taking this opportunity to thank everybody around the world for listening to what's sure to be another great episode of the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. There you go. I did my spit.
I was interrupting that, and for that, yeah. I must say I'm sorry. But I was so excited because, you know, Sean, right now, again, I'm telling our listeners that if you're listening to the show, go to re-enter our website. Go down to chat room and click on temp chat room, so
click
that
on
you get the chat room for tonight, because our other chat room is down. We had to do that. That's why we were 5 minutes late tonight, folks. We had to set up a chat room last minute, but leave it to us to have a backup chat room, because we have to have a backup everything, because every week something goes wrong. But I was very excited, Sean, because we had multiple people send us tips of the week.
We did. People have been jumping up off their couches, man. They've been getting involved in the G&D show. I like to see that.
That excites me, because people just I know you and I are entertainers, Sean. We come here every week to give you a look at the paranormal, but to entertain while we do it too, because, you know, if you want to just sit around and do nothing all night, you'd go ghost hunting.
Right, absolutely.
So, that's what's involved. But this week, I want to send our thanks. And if you sent one out this week and we haven't gotten to it yet, trust me, it will die down. We will get to your tip of the week. I want to thank everybody who sent us one this week. But this week, we're going to go with Chicken Zombie Tom.
Oh, Chicken Zombie.
Chicken Zombie Tom. Loves our show, listens to the podcast every week while he's at work, and has a question about ghost hunting. He wants us to give a tip of the week on what questions you should ask.
Well, before you go into that, Demon Hunter, I just wanted to say, good friends of the show, Tim and Trish Yancey from Encounters Radio, our thoughts and prayers are with you guys. We love you, and, you know, we're with you all the way, guys. And
Tim lost a very dear family member this week, and we just want to say, Tim, you're a brother. We love you, and our hearts are with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With that said.
All right. Question of the week for tip of the week. Like I said, you don't have to send us the tip yourself. You can send us the question, and we'll try and find a tip for it. And so this week, the question was, what questions should people be asking when doing an EVP session? And is it proper to ask, how long have you been dead?
I think it is.
I don't see a problem with that. Some people get upset with that because they say they don't know they're dead. If they don't know they're dead, maybe you're giving them a piece of information they really need.
Yeah.
Because who knows what's going on in those guys' heads right now. They might want be screaming in your ear and wondering why you're not answering. So that's okay.
That's right. Somebody I once worked with said that dealing with death in the afterlife was as close to insanity as he ever wanted to come. Because the spirits that he came into contact with and stuff, he thought they were almost to the point of insanity. You know, thinking about that they have lost their life. Nobody around them, their loved ones, whatever, couldn't understand what was going on. And that has to be a hard transitional time for a spirit.
And maybe that transitional time, you know, we think of time one way. They've crossed, they could have really crossed a dimensional path. Time could be totally different for them.
It could.
What we're looking at as like somebody's been haunting this place for 100 years, for them, it could be 2 days.
Right, right.
So
or 15
it could be,
minutes.
It could be the same day they died, yeah. So it's they might not know they're dead, but, you know, it might be okay for you to ask. Me, I like to go in and ask questions that you might not normally ask. I like to ask what their favorite food is. One of the best EVPs I ever got was when we were talking about what we were going to go get for dinner.
Right.
And we were talking about where we were going to go. And the ghost strictly went right out and told us he wasn't leaving. He wasn't going to dinner.
He wasn't.
He didn't want to go. So we had to go by ourselves. Unfortunately, we didn't get the message until afterwards when we were listening to the audio. But yeah. I like to ask questions like, What's your favorite food? How long have you lived here? I do them in cycles. The first cycle are yes and no questions.
What's your favorite sexual position?
Well, that comes later. I like to ask things like yes and no questions to start it. To make it easy, I'll say things like, are you a man? Are you a woman? Is this room blue? You know, it's a good question to ask, because once you look at that killer, that green death film that you watch afterwards with infrared cameras, you won't know if the room was blue, but the ghost might tell you whether or not it is. Then I go into one word questions. You know, what is your name? What is your favorite food? What is your favorite sexual position? Then I go into the ones that they would have to give longer answers for, like what year is it?
Once you get them on the hook, you know.
It's kind of like telemarketing. But that's the way I do it. That's my tip for the week. How about you, Sean? You're the EVP man. You love EVP.
When I, you know, everybody knows David Hunter. I love EVP. I love analyzing it. I love to see what decibel marks it's at. I love to see if it's above or beyond, above or below human hearing. And I just love EVP, electronic voice phenomena. And the first questions I always start out with is, like you said, is there anyone here that'd like to speak with us? It's the same kind of question you get with the Ouija board and all that stuff, man. And then I go on to say, are you a child? Are you an adult? Sometimes they don't ask if you're a man or a woman because, let's face it, we got people living today that don't know if they're man or woman. So, you know, it's kind of hard to ask that question in the afterlife. I don't want to put anybody outside there, you know. So, you know, I start asking them that, and I start asking them if they have a favorite place in the house where we're at or the building, and why they stay here.
Now, you like to listen to EVP in real time. You like to use the bionic ear.
I do.
And when we were at Whispers Estate, I set up the studio so that we could listen to it in real time.
Yeah.
Anything that came through. And Jared and I were on that, and we heard stuff that other people didn't hear.
Right. And it was happening in real time. We could communicate in real time with them. That was pretty outrageous, man.
Yeah, that was something. So, tip of the week. When asking your questions, start with yes and no questions. Move on to one word answers. Then you can move on to your higher questions. And like I said, when we were talking about EVP session styles, I like to do 15 minutes of silence or 10 minutes of silence, then 10 to 15 minutes of asking questions, then 10 to 15 minutes of people just being able to talk, and then finishing it off with another 10 to 15 minutes of, again, pure silence. And when during that first 10 to 15 minutes, take notes of any noises you hear. So later on, you can rub them out if you hear something you don't. If you hear a click, you know it was the refrigerator.
Rub it out.
I knew that was coming. I knew I shouldn't have said that.
But I got to say, Nate, Demon Hunter, a good friend of the show, Carmen Reed, guys, a big thing for the paranormal community. This week, March 27th, the movie The Haunting in Connecticut will be in theaters everywhere, at least on the East Coast. I don't know about everywhere else. But March 27th, guys, that's going to be out there. A good friend of the show, Carmen Reed, very hard time with her and her family that they a very hard ordeal that they went through, and that's going to be a movie now, guys, and it's going to be a very interesting movie, I think, and it's going to be out everywhere, so you got to catch that flick March 27th, man.
And you know, it's funny, I that game, that poker game where I lost the studio this week, three aces, man, who wouldn't go all in on three aces? But that was up in the area where Haunting in Connecticut took place. So when people found out I was a ghost hunter at the game, of course, every question was about, is that real? Is the story true? Do you know the people involved? And fortunately, I got to say yes to a lot of it. it was cool. But so yeah, that's a great, I'm really looking forward to that coming out. I'm going out to see it next week. I believe the previews for it were this week in New York.
Okay.
Because I was sent, because I live so close to New York, I was sent tickets for it, but I just couldn't get down there. So, but what are you going to do? I'm sure Cameron is there this weekend. And
Carmen. Absolutely.
Carmen. Sorry. You know, I called her Cameron to her face several times, so that's my bad. But
after going through what she's gone through, I don't think mispronouncing her name. Yeah.
Well, everyone will remember her name now. Best wishes to you, Carmen. And with that, Sean, what's our wild and crazy news stories of the week?
Well, I got a bunch of them, but I just wanted to say one time, because I am Irish, I'm Irish-American, and I'm American first, guys, but my ancestors came over from Ireland, and we just had St. Paddy's Day. I can't believe that I didn't mention that last weekend. Green beer, all that good stuff. Of course, I was at work. I didn't get to celebrate that. But it was St. Paddy's Day. And I wanted to do a special story on the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show about St. Paddy's Day. And the one thing that I could find on ParanormalAbout.com, that's ParanormalAbout.com, is the little people. That's from fairies to woodland people to leprechauns. And it still says that 53% of the population believe in little people, fairies, hobgoblins, leprechauns, whatever, and they had so many different ones. If you guys go to ParanormalAbout.com, you can find the story. It says, where are the little people? And it talks about these encounters that people are still having today with these little people. One lady back in 1999, she was out in her backyard with her daughter, and she noticed a little man behind the tree that her daughter had said she had seen every day. And one day she was out doing the laundry and she seen the little man. She said he had long fingers and he looked just like a gnome. He was behind the tree, was staring at her, and then he was gone. So you still have people, guys, all over the country that are investigating this little, I don't want to say little man syndrome, but the little people syndrome. They're looking out, and this could be a very real thing with the paranormal community. You don't hear a lot about it, Demon Hunter.
No, you Elves. Don't at all. I remember an episode of Taps where they went out looking for fairies and gnomes and leprechauns and stuff like that when they were in Ireland. But the infrared pictures they got of something moving along looked an awful lot like rabbits to me. So I don't know. I know you have that that video on your laptop of the leprechaun somebody saw.
Yeah, he's walking. He's got a little limp there. That was in, I can't remember that where that was from, but that was a huge story.
Are you kids... sure Gary Coleman wasn't just in the area?
It was, unless he was wearing a pointy hat and he had lost size over the years, because this little creepy thing was weird. He was creeping along the boulevard, and the kids with their cell phones, they actually captured that. But I wanted to go right into another story, Demon Hunter. Very important. I want our listeners to know about this, because you know one of the biggest problems in the paranormal community right now is we're losing haunted locations. People that own them, you got Fort Mifflin, you got all these places out there that are going to be just condemned. They're going to tear them apart, guys, if we don't step in and save them. Here's a story out of Florida. The title is Group Wants Ghost House Saved. Florida ghost hunters are really, really into saving Seven Sisters Inn, the historic and haunted bed and breakfast that faces foreclosure if it's not sold by April 7th.
Now, where is that located?
This is in Florida. It's in right outside of St. Augustine.
It just amazes me that I've heard of it. But go ahead.
It's called Seven Sisters Inn. It's a bed and breakfast that faces foreclosure if it's not sold by April 7th. Seven Sisters Inn is a bed and breakfast that consists of two homes listed on the National Historic Registry. Now, that's another good one, Demon Hunter. I cannot believe that our United States of America is willing to demolish or get rid of places that are on the National Historic Registry. I cannot believe that, but they are. It says some paranormal investigators believe that the inn is haunted. Southeastern paranormal investigators known as SEPI, S-E-P-I, a group that offers ghost tours, has launched a online petition urging the inn's mortgage holder to extend the foreclosure deadline. If you want some of this, guys, if you want to get involved, save the Seven Sisters Inn. You can go to www.savethesevensistersinn.com. That's www.savethesevensistersinn.com. Just like it sounds, guys. You can go there. You can go there right now. You can put your name on, support it, sign the petition to save the Seven Sisters Inn out there, man. Because they're tearing apart too many old places. And
it's St. Augustine. It's considered on the top five haunted cities in America, isn't it?
Well, I believe it's right outside of St. Augustine. And yes, you are correct about St. Augustine being one of the top five. And, you know, I'm not sure. You have to forgive me about the county this lies in Florida. But it's a classic tale of big business moving in, saying we can't afford to keep this place going. And it's being foreclosed on. And the state's like, well, we're not going to take care of it, guys. You know, so if nobody steps up, then they're just going to tear it down. And so like I said, man, go to SaveTheSevenSistersInn.com. Put your vote in there, guys, all the G&D show listeners, and make sure this place doesn't fall to history. Make sure that our kids can go there and ghost hunt when they're our age.
Now,
make sure of that.
If our guest tonight is listening, we started about 5 minutes late. We might be 5 minutes late going to him, but we're going to go 5 minutes over so that we can we don't lose any time with our guest tonight, because I want to hear the news story Sean promised everybody this week.
Well, that was company turns dead bodies into diamonds, right?
That would be correct, sir.
It says Chicago. This is out of Chicago, guys. The Windy City bubbly young widows can prove their love truly was solid as a rock when their rich geyser husbands croak by having the old buzzard's corp turn into a beautiful diamond ring. A company has developed an innovative process for turning cremated human remains into gorgeous diamonds that can be worn as jewelry. A thimbleful of ash can be made into a dazzling diamond worth $4,000 and of the same quality as those you would find at Tiffany's. According to Greg Hero, head of Life Gem Memorials, which has begun marketing the eye-catching blue, red, and yellow diamonds for $22,000, you can have a larger one diamond made, a perfect engagement ring for the groom who thinks his dead mom was a real gem. We're building
now,
on the same.
Here's the question. Can you have your mother-in-law turned into one before she dies?
I don't think that. I think that's against the rules. I don't think you can do that.
Go ahead.
It's just a piece of coal. If you crush your... We're building on the simple fact that all living creatures are carbon-based and diamonds are carbon-based. Hero explained in an interview, the crafty entrepreneur spent 3 years refining the process and successfully creating the first human remains diamond in July. The ash is purified in a special furnace at 5,400 degrees Fahrenheit. It's then crushed under intense pressure and heat, replicating the forces that form the precious stones in nature. The process takes about 4 months. Man-made diamonds have been around since the 1950s, but this is the first time that carbon from a human being has been made into a diamond. So there you go, guys.
Very interesting.
I thought that was very,
now,
very
now
interesting.
The question is, we got to hope that people don't go out and start going on like a murder spree so they can turn their victims into diamonds. That would actually make a cool book, though.
Right.
I'm copywriting that tomorrow, folks. Nobody try and steal my idea.
Hey, did you hear one of our friends, Charlie Carlson, came out of Weird Florida, of course, the author of Weird Florida, and they're promoting a big event, guys, going down Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in St. Augustine, Florida. They're going to have a haunted brick there, Demon Hunter.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
It's been around for years. Everybody that's come into contact with it, with it has had paranormal activity happen to them and in their lives and to their loved ones. And I don't know if it's been very bad paranormal activity or good paranormal activity, but this thing is on display. It's going to be in the next couple of weeks, I think, guys. Next show, I will have the specific dates for you guys. But you can go down there. You're going to have the Professor Slim King is going to be in the house. Very good friend of the show. And they're doing a big promotional thing down there, guys. You got to get down there right away. And it's going to be a hoot, man. It's going to be a hoot.
Well, bro, I know you've got one more story. You know what? We might go 10 minutes, even 15 minutes over with our guest tonight to make sure we get plenty of time with him. So, folks, stick around. I want to hear one more story from Sean before we go to our break.
Okay, before we go to the break, guys, out of the Telegraph, out of the UK, fish with human face spotted in South Korea. Now, I hope I didn't read this last week, because if I did, you have to listen to it again. But it's a great story, guys. It says the humanoid carp are attracting attention in the town of Cheongguan in the center of the country where they live in a small pond. They are believed to be the hybrid descendants of two carp species, the carp and the leather carp, also known as tangerine fish. Both fish are females and more than 3 feet long. They appear to have distinctive human noses, eyes, and lips. The fish live in a pond beyond the home of a 64-year-old South Korean man and have been there since 1986. Although their looks are only just starting to attract attention, my fish have been getting more and more human from the past couple of years, the owner said. He added that he knows of other fish with similar features, and as they are both females, it will be impossible for them to breed and have fish-faced offspring. This is the second time in recent months that carp have made headlines in Asia. Last November, a shoal of fish in Changsha in China's Hunan province turned on a duck who landed on their lake looking for food. The koi carp took exception to the intruder and fought back, bunching together into a seething mass to assert their authority, forcing the duck to fly away, guys. So there you go, right there, out of South Korea.
That there's two different ways that could go in my book right now. One, we could be talking reincarnation, and some physical traits have returned. The person might have not lived the best life, you know, came back as a carp so that he could have some time to think about his life. Or some people have been having some nasty ass... thank you. I almost said something I'm not allowed to say on the radio.
Yeah.
Some nasty sex in the lakes out there, and some little swimmers got away. So, people are going to be emailing me about the fact that I almost goofed up this week, Sean, because it's usually you.
I got to say, you got all these guys around the world in the shower with a bar of soap. And the offspring might not
okay,
be heading.
Okay. Just because I almost goofed up doesn't mean you didn't get to go off the wall.
Hey, you open it up, man. You open it up.
Hey, what do you say we take a quick break? When we come back, we'll have our guest for tonight, Reverend Tim Shaw.
All right, guys, stay tuned. Tim Shaw up next.
I'm Tim Yancey, inviting you to explore the fascinating realm of the paranormal. Ghosts and hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, and alien abductions. Join me live every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. with the foremost authorities and experts in the world regarding the mysterious realm of the unexplained. The Encounters Paranormal Radio Series, as heard on WBZT 1230 AM. EncountersBroadcasting.com.
The vault is open. You're listening to the Haunted Headlines, your source for the stories making waves in the paranormal news. sponsored by GhostVillage.com at www.ghostvillage.com/news.
Good evening and welcome to the Haunted Headlines, Ghost Village's weekly journey around the paranormal newswire to bring you the biggest stories affecting the ghost community. I'm Chris Balzano. Ghosts just can't let a person make a buck. It was a case of deja vu this week as two different stories came out of the paranormal interfering with people trying to make a living. The first report came out of Jordan, where workers in Amman are refusing to go back to the job until the evil spirits are exorcised from the factory they work in. Head of the Textile Industry Workers Union, Fahalat Amrani, claims, quote, a total of 367 workers belonging to the Sri Lankan and Indian nationals have been on strike at the industrial zone in Jhahab, 20 kilometers east of Amman, alleging that their plants are dwelt by devils, unquote. The interesting thing is not just that the workers claim these spirits are getting in the way. What may be more interesting is the company caved in and brought in Muslim preachers to read passages from the Quran, encouraging more than half to return to work. The rest are trying to find other jobs or moving back to their home countries. Those crazy countries and their superstitions, you think? Maybe not. According to the Birmingham Mail this week, work has stopped at Midland Historic Castle near Birmingham, England for the same reason. People hired to complete a tourist attraction for paranormal enthusiasts, including a torture chamber in the basement filled with ghost actors, also downed their tools when things became a bit too eerie. People on site saw a strange apparition, were constantly losing their tools, and smelled out-of-character odors like lavender. The castle has a haunted reputation, part of the reason the tourist attraction is planned in the first place, but now the project is going to struggle to be completed before its planned Easter target opening. Rest assured, when it does open, it already has started to build some press for itself. In Ocala, Florida, the real estate market may be having an impact on the paranormal world. The Seven Sisters Inn, one of the haunted landmarks of Central Florida, is facing foreclosure if not sold by April 7th. The bed and breakfast is made up of two restored century-old homes selling for $1.3 million, and they will become the property of First Coast Community Bank and sold at auction if a reasonable price is not offered. Enter Southeastern Paranormal Investigations, or SEPI. They, along with investigator George Mersando, have started an online campaign to save the house, which is registered at the National Registry of Historic Places. SEPI's reputation can be found at www.petitiononline.com/7pet/petition.html. And more information on Mersando's project can be found at www.savethesevensistersinn.com. Of course, both of these can be seen at the Ghost Village News section at www.ghostvillage.com/news. Those are our stories for this week. If you want to find out more about these stories or others, please make sure to visit the Ghost Village News section at www.ghostvillage.com/news and wait until next week until we can bring you more of the biggest stories affecting the paranormal community. I'm Chris Balzano, and that's what's haunting me.
Experience the charm and mystery of the Deep South through ghost stories by attending the highly respected Roswell Ghost Tour. Your experienced guide will lead you on this two-hour outdoor walking tour through the historic district of Roswell. One of the highlights of the tour is a visit to Founders Cemetery, the burial site of Roswell King, where bodies are buried beneath modern streets and houses. Grand Greek Revival mansions and humble mill workers' apartments are some of the haunted sites you'll see on this mile of easy walking. Check RoswellGhostTour.com for the current schedule. Tours run most Friday and Saturday nights year-round, and private tours may be arranged. Reservations are required. Call 770-649-9922. That's 770-649-9922 for more information. Happy haunting from Roswell Ghost Tours.
Hi, I'm Laura Laddick of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society, and you're listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Oh, Sean, I know our guest is sitting in the third chair, but we haven't gotten to hear from our buddy Jason Gowen in a couple of weeks now.
Everyone.
That would be you, Mr. Gowen.
Hello, welcome to the program.
How are you feeling there in the third row back there? You're not going to fall asleep during the class, are you?
Well, I've heard this show before. I shouldn't fall asleep. At least in 9 or 10 minutes or so.
Did you guys hear the story right before you came on? Nathan almost said ASS on the air. He was talking about fish that are developing human features.
Oh, crap. I just hit an armadillo.
Only on the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show will you hear about the ghost of an armadillo.
Oh man, I just had him flying, man. I am so okay. I'm sorry. I am sorry.
Pull off to the side. Give him ass.
Give him a what?
Oh no, he's still alive.
Go over and just give him a little. Well, if he's still alive, you got to finish him off, dude.
Yeah,
I can't. Nathan, no!
Throw it in reverse, man.
You're going to let him just sit there and suffer? You can't do that.
All right, hold on. Reverend, is it okay if I do this?
Put it out of the misery, baby.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I got a short list. When you come up to New York, I got a couple people you can run up over here.
Okay.
It's gotta be done, bro. It's gotta be. Hey, Reverend, you don't mind if we go over with our time tonight, right? Because we started late. We want to get all our time in with you.
That's fine. No problem at all.
Wunderbar.
Well, you can tell that the Reverend does a radio show because he has better acoustics than we do.
He does. He sounds better than us. We blow a few grand on our studio, and the Reverend sounds better than us. So yeah.
It's like the voice of God.
Well, I looked down upon you all, and I said, that computer is thou good, and it's good enough.
Good enough to rock on, baby. See, everybody has a different impression of what they think God would sound like. Well, I think God's cool. I think he's loose. He's like, hey, man, rock out, baby. You know what I mean? Keep it cool, but keep on rocking.
I think God has a lisp only because I have one, and I was created in his image. So,
see, there you go. He might.
Listen, I've got hair in other places other than my head. Does that mean that God has it there too?
I think I think he must.
I have a third nipple, so
now we know we're all in trouble.
See.
Now let's literally go back to our man on the street. How are things there, Gowen?
Well, I get the deed, but I'm not happy about it.
I don't blame you.
He's working the street, Demon Hunter.
He is. I am sorry, Gowen. I know it's tough when you have to do that. I once had a similar event with a hamster, but we won't go into that. Anyway.
Wow.
What? I worked in a pet store, and he got attacked by other hamsters. I had to kill him. It was, that's all.
What you gotta do?
But no hamster jokes out there, people. Anyway.
So we got the Reverend Tim Shaw in the house tonight, guys.
Welcome, Reverend.
Without hamster jokes?
Richard Gere, I mean, jokes. It's terrible.
Wait,
I actually like Mothman props.
Wait a minute.
The comments of Sean Burrs do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
I might have almost said a bad word, but I'm not getting sued by Richard Gere.
If he sues us, he's got to sue half of America.
Well, you don't know. He might have been part of that pansy scam there, so who knows. But
Hey, Reverend, did you hear this week? This is hot. Dan Aykroyd came forward and admitted that he believes in UFOs, that he's seen them many times and that he studied them. And he thinks, without a doubt, we are not alone in the universe. Dan Aykroyd.
I met him a couple years ago, and he's a big devotee of it.
Yeah, he came forward, man. It was out there in the news this week. He finally busted through his shell, and he said, hey, folks,
listen,
we're not
there's alone. Always time for people to come out of the closet on this stuff. You know what I mean?
Now, Reverend, do you think that he became a fan or a interest in UFOs after he did My Stepmom is an Alien with I can't even remember her name now.
Kim Basinger?
Kim Basinger.
Kim
Basinger. I mean, I think he
had an interest a long time before that.
Oh, okay. Because if I thought all aliens,
the question is the person who really wanted him to do that movie, were they truly aliens?
There you go. It's did an alien take over his body the day he signed the contracts?
I want to know. I think so. I definitely think so.
If I thought all aliens looked like Kim Basinger, then I would believe too. So
I would want to be alien probed right now.
What's that, Gal?
Originally, Ghostbusters was set in space.
And I made an anal probe comment.
And he originally wanted to have it set in space, but the studio rejected it because it was just going to cost them too much.
Right.
Well, you know, right. I'm happy Ghostbusters was set here on Earth because it made it more, well, I was about to say believable, but it made it more tangible for me to understand. So.
But isn't that movie just as unrealistic as some of the reality shows that are out there right now?
Well, yes and no. You know, the funny thing is, I like the reality ghost hunting shows only because they give, being a ghost hunter, you can watch them and get the snippets that you know are real.
Exactly.
And you can sit there with all your friends who don't know anything about ghost hunting, and you can tell them what's real and what's not. And when it's all done, you can make a drinking game out of it.
Right. And so, you know the real parts, Reverend. It's the stuff that they don't catch in between on commercial break.
Exactly. You know what? When I'm out there and I'm out in the field doing it, I keep looking for the. I was going to say the Coors Light commercial, but you know how it is. I shouldn't be plugging a beer.
On this show, you can.
Can I sing the song? People all over the world. Love
no,
train.
No. You can't sing the song. Sing the song because we do not want any copyright infringement.
It's a good song.
I almost started singing right along with you guys.
It's a good song. So is most of the stuff Jimi Hendrix wrote, but you don't see me playing it on the show now, do you?
I was going to open up with a reference to Kiss saying Love Gun this weekend, but I didn't do it. I seen it in the movie this week. And we all know Love Gun.
Reverend, you are a reverend. Please tell us what you are a reverend of.
I am a spiritualist, ordained spiritualist minister.
Now, where does one become a ordained spiritualist minister?
Well, it's certainly not in the back of a men's magazine, boys. I will tell you that.
So my reverency does not count. Okay, all right, now.
Or is that irreverent? Sometimes I get those confused.
Right, right.
I'm a high priest in the Church of Hannah, Montana.
And if you ever
we won't hold that against you at all.
If you ever call Jason's cell phone, you will find out that is true. So
now, listen, Reverend, I got to tell you something. I am the ghost man. I'm from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, and right out here in my state, out buried deep in the cornfields, is one of the oldest spiritualist communities, Camp Chesterfield.
Yes.
And last Easter, that's been the Easter before last. It's been 2 years ago. I had the privilege and the honor of setting in on a Easter Sunday ceremony at the spiritualist community there at Camp Chesterfield. And I got to tell you, it was amazing. I mean, the stuff they do, the way it is. Now, are you similar to that?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, the spiritualist religion, there's several different sects of that religion that's out there now. A lot of it all started with the National Spiritual Association way back, you know, in the early 1900s. And of course, I mean, it's all changed from there. And there's a lot of different offshoots. There's Christian metaphysical spiritualists. There's, the hardcore spiritualists. I mean, there's, I hate to even say it, but sometimes I think there's a rolling rock spiritualist. You know, it depends on where you are. I mean,
there's
a lot of different ones out there.
That's yeah. Sean's spiritualism.
I got to tell you, Rev, I was out there. Can I call you Rev?
You can call me anything you want, my brother.
Don't say that. Nope.
I've been called worse. So you know what? There's nothing on this radio station that you can call me to offend me.
No, I respect the Reverend.
That's true because I would bleep Sean out.
Chesterfield. When I was out at Camp Chesterfield, I went into the shop that they had, and they sold all kinds of spiritualist stuff. And I was trying to sell a house from a previous marriage that I was in, and it just wasn't selling. It went on for about 6 to 7 months, maybe even a year, this house was not selling. Not one person was even calling in on it. And the little old lady that was working the shop out at Camp Chesterfield came up to me, and she said, "Are you trying to sell a house?" Now, she knew nothing about me. And I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I am." So she handed me this little plastic St. Joseph statue in a box. And she told me to take it to my house, bury it upside down in the front yard with the face, with the feet pointing towards the street, which I did. I purchased it. I took it out there. I buried it, face pointing towards the street. Within 3 weeks, guys, I'm not lying to you, within 3 weeks, we had a person call, say they wanted the house at asking price, and it was sold. Done deal.
And didn't she tell you it would be within a month?
Yeah, she actually told me. She said, if you buy this, this would be within a month or so that this house would sell. And it
did. That's actually an old Catholic, ritual that a lot of the Roman Catholics that I know do that. So within the Roman or within the spiritualist religions, there's a lot of different hybrid societies and thoughts and philosophies within it. So they really don't throw out a lot of things. They really go and many of them espouse much more of the other religions that are out there. I mean, there's some hardcore, and we won't go into which organizations are super, super hardcore.
Right.
But I have to say that most of the religions, that most of the spiritualist religions that are worth their spit, those are the people that go out there and they espouse everything that's good, because the original spiritualism was a hybrid. It was a philosophy, and it looked at all these different ways of doing things and all these different so-called holy books and incorporated them into their belief system. So by doing that, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Now, how do you get involved with the spiritualist church? Do you have to be psychic or?
No, not at all. Not at all. You can become a spiritualist just like any other religion. The thing with the spiritualist religion is that we don't go out there looking for converts. That's not our thing. We're not people that are going to go knock on your door. We're people that we want you to come, and if it's something that you may be interested in, come to a couple services. If you like it, wait a year, see if it really fits you. Then join. If it doesn't fit you, welcome to go on. The big thing with the spiritualist religion.
Where's go on?
Pardon?
Where's go on?
Go on to another religion.
Oh, okay.
Here's the thing. We don't really care. That's what the bottom line is. Sure, you like to have the money in the coffers to keep the organizations going. But in overall, we're not just out there converting. I mean, that's not it. That's what it's all about. We let people kind of find us.
You know, it's funny.
We have websites and stuff, but I mean, we just let people come and find us.
It's funny, Reverend. When I first got involved with the paranormal, it was with the Reverend Robert Ludwig.
In
New Jersey before he passed away. And
yeah.
He was actually my teacher when I was first started as a, before it was really called ghost hunting, it was often called psychic investigation.
Exactly.
And he was my first teacher in the paranormal. And so I know how the spiritualist movement works in the paranormal. But for those in the audience who don't know, would you give a little explanation of how spiritualism works in the ghost hunting and paranormal world?
Well, basically, spiritualism, the bottom line tenet, now everybody's got different declarations of principles, every sect has different ones, but they pretty much all say the same thing. What the religion believes in is that there is a life after death, and what we do within our services is to bring not readings, like where people will go to a psychic fair, greetings. They're short messages that bring through identifiers for someone who may have passed that you'll be able to go and understand who it is, to prove that there is a life after death. Some of the religions say that it's a science. I kind of question that sometimes. But I have to say that the bottom line is we're out there to prove. We're out there to work. Now, this is what I love about modern paranormal, investigators. I was brought up in this. I mean, I was first introduced to it back in 1963 when I was a kid. And we have a pretty big spiritualist camp here called Lilydale that's about 50 minutes from my house.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had relatives there that were readers, and You know, so, I mean, to me, this is nothing. But I was brought up traditionalist. I was brought up with the seance, and I was brought up with, the, you know, people using the slates and using the spirit trumpets, which are those long funnels, and supposedly eight ports come through it and voices and all that. And you know what? I've seen some really great things, and I've seen a lot of frauds in my life. And you know what? A lot of people get upset when I talk about that. But I have seen a lot of so-called ministers and mediums out there that were fraudulent. And it's just the same way that the Fox sisters and something. Leah Fox was caught with phosphorus on her hands. You have to be able to go and understand. And being part, if you're going to be serious in this religion, you also have to be a skeptic. You have to be able to go and look at things critically. And this is what I love about the new paranormal. People, you know, a lot of people put it down. But I love the fact that we're out there doing all sorts of great things. Now, I just got turned on to the new paranormal probably about 6-8 years ago, where we really started working for the looking for EMF spikes, and we're looking for all these different things. I love ITC technology. This is the electronic seance. And you know what, guys? It's just a wonderful thing. Now, if you can go and combine the new paranormal with the traditionalist spiritualist beliefs and the way that they do things, man, it's a powerhouse. It's really a powerhouse. And I've had some really great and interesting experiences.
Now, what do you say, Reverend Tim, when people come at you and they say you're a reverend and everything, and then they start talking about the Holy Bible, the big book, right? And
right.
In the big book, it talks about you shouldn't, forgive my ignorance, it does say something where you shouldn't commune with the dead.
Right. I've been called a necromancer. The people, now, you guys got to understand, I might be an ordained minister, but I got a day job, just like everybody else. And I'm going to tell you something. I've got a lot of they're good people. I'm not going to put them down because they're very, very solid in their faith. But they come up to me, and I've been called a necromancer to my face. Here's what the way I feel about it. The Bible is a wonderful, wonderful book of great tales and morality plays. It is right up there with every other sacred text. I don't, just like every sacred text, just like a lot of the even medical books that we work with now, you've got to be able to go and use your own common sense. And a true spiritualist will tell you that you have got free will to do whatever you want. In order to exercise free will, you've got to exercise common sense. So here's the thing, guys. You know what? Somebody comes up to me and says, this is the end-all book. If you read this, you're going to heaven. That's great. Go to your heaven. I don't believe in heaven. I don't believe in hell. You know? Do what you got to do to make it and satisfy your life. Me, I'm very, very happy. Doesn't bother me a bit.
Right. Now, that's a good question you bring up, Reverend. You're talking about you don't believe in heaven and hell. What do you think these ghosts on the EVPs and stuff like that we're doing right now, what do you think? Where are these ghosts coming from? Is there a limbo like the Catholics believe, or what's happening, man?
I believe that I'm going to come right out and tell you exactly what I believe it is. I believe it is a frequency. What you got to understand something. When we start looking at this type of phenomena, we've got to just take religions and toss them out the window. We've got to take civilization and toss it out the window. We got to go back to primitive man. Primitive man was a hunter-gatherer society that had to use a sixth sense, had to commune with something else other than verbal or within the five senses, of the realm of the five senses, in order to survive. You had to find shelter. You had to follow the herds. You had to go and figure something out. You had to find water. You had to survive. When we became an agricultural society, we gave a lot of that up. And the only people that followed the old ways, of course, were shamans and medicine men, and they called priests and that sort of thing. And then, guys, you know, I mean, this stuff is innate in all of us. I believe that's beyond a sixth sense. I believe that when we pass, we become frequencies. We all know that we're all in a state of vibration. Everything is vibrating. The slower it vibrates, the easier it is to see, hear, feel, smell, whatever. That's what spirit is. Spirit goes into a vibratory state.
Well, that's definitely with the ITC teachings. I know that. So,
well, have you guys ever worked with low frequency rather than just the high frequency bands? If I've been very, very successful. I work with a Joe's box and I work with a Hack box often. And I've got a lot of great things on the AM frequency band. Now, if you start, if I'm getting such a good response on AM instead of FM. Let's go back into even lower frequency. We know that lower frequency turns around. And, you know, do you ever guys play with one of those low frequency radios where, like, you start hearing crackles and stuff, what they call whispers?
Yeah.
You hear lightning storms hundreds of miles away? Dude, think of this. On some of your EVPs, you're getting that pop, that crackle, preceding a word or a couple of words in an EVP, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Think of it like this. What happens if the concept of heaven is actually low frequency and the earth becomes the battery for it?
See, that's deep, man. We need some Cheech and Chong stuff on that one. That's, that's deep, Reverend. That's deep.
Now, Reverend, what you were saying about the earth being the battery, how do you feel about these about the belief among people that spirits, when they manifest, drain your batteries?
I've had it happen. I will say I've had it happen. But Fort Niagara here in Youngstown, New York, we were doing an impromptu investigation. I used to be a volunteer up there. And I actually have had, so long as the equipment is on, I've had two camera batteries drain and an EMF meter drain along with my digital. I've had all these things drain within a five-minute period.
Now, do you think that's
one of these casemates?
Do you think that's a ghost draining your batteries, or do you think
not necessarily
side effect?
So I believe it's a side effect. I really and truly do. And is it really a ghost that is draining it? We have to look at the geological explanations and you got to look at what you're standing on. Now, I'm a dowser, guys, you know, and you can believe in dowsing or not believe in dowsing, but we know that there's earth energy lines. I believe that. I've been able to go and really find a couple trouble spots by finding where two negative ley lines may cross, causing, you know, what people consider residual energy or whatever. But also in this life and also in this atmosphere, there is mindless energy that's just floating around, you know?
Right.
And that's where we have a lot of our visual orbs that come in. I'm a firm believer in that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be an intelligent entity that happens to be touching in. I know I'm talking blasphemy for my fellow spiritualists because I don't believe everything happens to be a ghost. But I'm going to tell you that I do believe that this mindless energy can feed into manifestations or whatever. But in tune, I believe that this energy can also drain your equipment and drain batteries.
Right. Now, Reverend Tim, I got to tell you, everybody always asks me, hey, Sean, what do you think about these ghosts we come into contact with? Do you think they're lost souls? That's the big thing right now. Oh, gosh, they're lost souls. We got to help them to the light. Yeah, and this is my opinion. This is one person's opinion, guys, so don't hate me for this. But I believe in the freedom to be who we are, even after death. Even after death, if we're here, it's because we want to be here.
Dude, give him the collection plate. You just hit something that people do not realize. I work... Now, I consult. I don't really belong to any groups anymore, but I consult with a lot. This way it takes me out of the politics. I don't have voting rights.
I'm clapping my hands here. You might not hear that, Reverend, but I'm clapping my hands because that's exactly what I've done, taking myself out of the groups. And when people ask me to be a member of their group, I say, you know what? I'd love to, but I have several groups I work with. So
you know what? Here's the way I say it. To know me is to hate me. Do yourself a favor. You know what? Call me in when you want me there, you know? But think about it, guys. Think about this whole thing. People, we're talking about spirits that are landlocked. Well, you know what? I call it self-landlocked. I've been in places where I've walked into some nasty stuff. I've had an attachment target me when we were working on a Native American reservation locally. And the minute I took the case, I was targeted, and they were looking to break me. And I'm going to tell you, they did. And I did a handoff of the case to a friend of mine who's an Algonquin elder who actually got a hold of somebody from the False Face Medicine Society up in the Onondaga Reservation. And they were able to go and handle this. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Spirits have the choice, just like we have free will. We're born with free will, and when we die, we have free will. What I can tell you in my experience, and that's working in some rescue circles, is the fact that some spirits don't want to leave. You know what? If they're a cantankerous SOB, just like I am, and really hate the people who are in my house, we can diminish up to a point, we can diminish their power by, you know, by lowering static electricity and stuff like that. We can do this. We can go in there and we can do prayer circles and we can do blessings. And we can kind of ease it out a little bit. But right. if that spirit doesn't want to leave, dude, it's not going to leave. I just right. had a case where somebody got mad at me because okay. I put, because, you know, guys, I'm a straight shooter. I'm sure by now, you know, you guys really don't know me, but I'm
no,
sure by now.
No, we thought you were faking the whole thing, Reverend.
Well, that's cool. I kind of like that. But you know what I mean? You know, I'm putting it out there. And I'm not, it's just the way I work with people. I'm going to tell you the truth, and I'm going to tell you exactly wherever the cards fall, fine, whatever you want to do. But here's the bottom line. If you guys want to go and strike a balance, you won't have a problem. But too many people play the victim in this life. Too many people want a nasty guy like me to come in, bless their house, and be a Ghostbuster, and they don't want to hear the fact that they've got to do the work.
Right.
That they've got to go out there and they as a family have to sit down and consciously say, listen, this is the way it's going to work. I don't want to hear you, see you, express, feel you. My house is full. I got this little Cape Cod house, man, and it's full right to the brim. There's all sorts of things going on. I had some stuff going on. I just yell out and I say, listen, I don't want to hear you, feel you, anything. You can stay, but, and that's setting boundaries. And when I teach mediums, right. First things I teach them is you're in control of the situation, and if you truly believe in that, and that's the intent, and that's the vibration you're putting out, you're in control. And boundaries, you allow spirit to work within your boundaries. And that's
Reverend
what people
Tim,
don't understand.
That's what I'm saying, Reverend Tim. You got all these shows out right now, and people go into the house, and they say, what happened? Well, I seen a little girl walk across the platform, or I seen a man walk and pick his nose down by the laundry room. And you exactly. got the... You got the psychic in there saying, okay, I'm going to send them to the light. Who are these people? How do we know they want to go to the light? Can't we
exactly.
can't we teach humans and spirits to live together?
Well, this is I mean, oh, brother, you're getting next week's collection plate too.
Hey, I don't even have a chance to get a collection plate.
But this is the bottom line. You've got to be able to educate the people. Now, I'm not going to go and I'm not going to put down New Agers, you know, the flower people that are running around with dead chickens and dancing corn.
Fuzzy white lighters.
I mean? That's not my thing because they have their belief system. I'm just going to tell you guys what has been effective for me. And it's not always exactly within the realm of the spiritualist church. But I got to tell you that if, you know, I mean, if you guys have ever participate in a spirit rescue, where a true spirit rescue, where you're standing around and you're calling on this spirit, it is like the most intense seance you've ever been into. It's this unbelievable feeling. And what you're doing is convincing this spirit to go on. Guess what? If it doesn't want to go on, it's not going to go on.
Right,
and
right.
that's the bottom line. And people see too much on TV. Again, what happens? TV is great because TV turns a lot of people on to the right stuff. I mean, they really get that interest and they get out there and they're doing it. But it also, on the flip side, presents it as a no-brainer. Oh, all I have to do is bring in some guy who's going to sprinkle holy water and paint crosses with holy water over my windows, and it's all gone.
Right.
Guys, it ain't like that. I mean, I've talked to John Zaffis for a while, and he and I really kind of see eye to eye in some certain things, you know? And I learned a lot from him.
There's no small task considering how bad that guy has to limp without a walker.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing, Tim, I trained under John for a while, too, and I've gotten all these different inputs on things, and one of the things I've noticed... Now, I'm gonna tell a brief story involved with this question, which normally I don't tell, because one of the things I learned over the years is the first thing you shouldn't do is make yourself special for what you do.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, when I went to see Robert for the first time, I went in and had a reading by him at a psychic fair. Normally, I would not attend such things because that's not what my upbringing had taught me to do. But I
right.
decided in my youth, I wanted to learn what other people thought, why they went to psychic fairs, why they believed there was a ghost in their house, why some people thought it was a ghost, some people thought it was a demon. So I thought the best thing I could do was go to every religion I could find and study under these people for as long as they would let me do it before they kicked me out.
And you did the right thing.
So this is what I did. And I went in there for the first time, and I had my reading, and I sat out in the lobby afterwards getting a glass of water when Robert came out and spoke to a person who said, I've got to take a break. I just did a reading for a young man who had enough energy to blow the roof off the place. Now, I assume he was talking about me because he had just read me, but considering how little energy I have these days, I find it hard to believe. But he taught me these ways to go in and work in houses using a spiritualist method. And the problem I had in the beginning was that it really made me feel special. And one of the problems I find nowadays going around to people's houses is I learned the lesson of this does not make you special.
No, it doesn't.
But people you go to their houses, they feel this makes them special. The fact
yes,
that they
it
have
does.
A ghost in their house makes them special. You go into a haunted bed and breakfast and look for a ghost and you find evidence and say, I want to help this ghost move on. They don't want you to help it move on. It's kitschy to have a ghost in their house.
And the other thing is financially, many of these places, and I'm not going to name names because I do work for, you know, I'll go in and I help these places out, don't want anything removed. Why? Because that's what brings in a cash flow.
Exactly.
Go so, sell, baby.
You know,
so obviously
it does.
You've been involved with this for a while. How have you seen it change from people wanting ghost hunters to come in and help them remove a ghost from having them want to, you to come in to confirm a ghost?
I have to say that most of the cases that I get called in on, they want it removed.
Really?
They
well,
want it removed.
I have
and
that, I have that
within
same
the
issue,
last
but
year,
people don't
I
call
can say
me.
That I have five cases right now that people wanted an alleged, and let's go with alleged on this, entity out of the house. The last two, one was the biggest BS you ever wanted to meet. And they were looking for a way to get out of leasing this house. So they thought they would be able to go, and they must have went online and researched demonology or whatever. The last case was one where these people are just making a mountain out of a molehill. Yeah, there's something going on, but it isn't negative. The last couple of years, I will say that there's more of an anxiety for demons. It's sort of like everything's a demon. And I've actually had to clean up a couple messes for people that have had groups come in and said, listen, you got a demon following you. And first of all, in the spiritualist religion, we don't really believe in demons. You know, that's devil, that whole thing. We don't really believe in that. But I can understand their anxiety over what is going on. However, you know, people just don't take responsibility for themselves. And yet when you go in there and you present them with evidence, how many times have you guys got an F you, die, get out on your EVPs? I've got them. I've got a few of them.
Oh, yeah.
You go to these places and I hear, love, you know, or
yeah.
Mary, or whatever,
peace.
You know? Yeah, you know, dude, let me tell you something. That don't sound like anything evil, you know?
Right.
That's cool, you know?
And you know, Reverend Tim, I always thought of hauntings when somebody called me in as OJIs, on-the-job injury. You go to the clinic, yeah, your shoulder kind of hurts, your wrist kind of hurts, but you want that extra 2 weeks off too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Hey, I just got to give a shout out because, yeah, we'll be finishing up soon because of the time. But for those of you in the chat room, which are like Ghost Chaser and Jerris and Chris from CVPI and somebody named something else that I'm not going to say on the air.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, okay. The chat room logged you out and you may have to log back into the chat room. But we had a lot of chat room issues before we started the show tonight, Reverend Tim. But
I'm not feeling well.
So tell us a little bit about the group you're involved in and how people can contact you.
Well, what I do is I consult with several different groups, but you can get a hold of me through my radio show, email, which is blackcatlounge1@yahoo.com. And I'm pretty, it has my schedules and stuff up there, so you can get me through there. And I'm usually able to go and write to you within that week and get back
wait,
to you.
Wait a second. That's not the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, so I'm going to have to write this down.
Well, you know, Reverend, unfortunately, when we booked you for a guest, nobody sent us your web address. So I'm going to have to put your web address up there. What is your web address?
It's www.blackcatlounge.ning.com. N-I-N-G, I'm sorry, .com.
Okay.
Because basically I'm a cheap guy and I'm not going to go and pay for anything expensive.
Reverend! Remember that from Blazing Saddles? Reverend!
You know, and,
you guys
and
don't remember that.
Just to make it clear, he's not
the bishop!
Okay, so he's the reverend. But
I got to tell you, you guys hit on a point that is very, very important. When you talked about people perceiving you as special, I go out of my way not to be special. I go out of my way not to be special. My religion teaches me that I am no different than anyone else. What I may do as a medium means nothing. Means nothing. Anybody can do it if they want to do it. All whatever ordination I have, whatever studies I've done, doesn't make me any different from anyone else. That is what makes me effective. That is what holds my religion together. Too many people out there go and they may take a couple courses, they get a certification, and all of a sudden they go, aren't I special? That's the feeding of the ego. You can't do that. You're not special. You're just like everyone else. Just like with those who pass aren't special. They're just different. That's all. And that's what you have to look for. And that's what I my biggest issue is a lot of people that go out there and build themselves as someone who is special. I find that the people who are most effective, and I've met exorcists over the years and I've talked to different clergies, and I've been very, very blessed because I've been able to go live so close to Lilydale, New York, and be able to go and meet some great people. And the people who are most effective, a guy like Ray Buckland, you know, who brought the Wiccan religion here to the U.S., guy like him is probably the most humble person you ever want to meet. And that's what makes him effective. Should be the hallmark of what we do.
One of my dearest friends is Janet Farah. She and her husband Stuart wrote The Witch's Bible.
Right.
And
I'm sorry. I admitted to reading something other than spiritualist text. I'm sorry. Oops.
But Janet.
Oops. I guess I'm out of the closet now.
Well, Janet, I would go to parties with her. And here I am with this famous person. And people would go through the night and never know who she was.
Exactly.
And I got to admit, it's a tough thing for me because I'm a radio show host. We go to events and people want to meet us. Not as many people as probably want to meet you, Reverend, but a few want to meet us. And
listen, guys, if I was to go and hang out with you guys, I would bring the cigars.
That would be awesome.
Let's do it. Name the place, man.
I go to these places and it's tough sometimes not to let that feeling overcome you to feel special. So I understand that people get tied up in it. But I think that a lot of people do it now, go out and ghost hunt for the sake of being special. And when people talk about going out and ghost hunting and this and that and how now basically all you need to be a ghost hunter is a digital camera and a voice recorder. And people go out and do it, and then they come back and tell their friends they're a ghost hunter because they went to a cemetery a few nights. I think I'm not one for certification. I'm one for groups certifying their investigators. I'm not one for, like, blanket certifications.
Well, here's the thing. I always ask. And this is what I always ask people. Now, I'm a certified medium. You know what? Again, in the long run, means nothing. Who certifies those who certify these people? I mean, what standards are we going to? This is a bone of contention in so many different groups that I work with. And you know what? Bottom line is, always have a standard that the group adheres to. Try to be as professional as you can and try to go and do a good job according to scientific method and being organized. And be honest. You don't get anything, so what? It doesn't matter. Somebody disproves what you got, be thankful for it. But go out there, and certifications mean nothing. However, the problem comes in is when people come out, and I really don't do psychic fairs except for like today was a charity event, so I did it. I went out there and worked today. So people are I'm looking at these people's signs, certified this, I'm that, I'm this. I'm looking at myself. I've got like some little cards there. It's like it doesn't matter, you know. But people are looking at people who are uninformed. The public is uninformed about if something is really on the level. And when they see something that says certified, they naturally gravitate to it because the Western mind thinks that if they pay for something, a service that is either certified or a higher price, they're actually getting something better than what it is. This is something in Reiki, Mrs. Takata, who brought Reiki to the United States. That's why she turned around and charged $10,000 for, you know, to learn and be attuned to the master level.
Because people in America don't respect anything they don't pay for.
You know what? How true is that? How
well,
true is
that
it?
Was
how
one many, of her reasons. You know, the only reason I said it was so that you knew that I actually studied at a spiritualist church.
You know, I mean, really.
But really. That's the fact. She said people in America do not respect anything they don't pay for. So,
exactly.
And I mean, I worked with one psychic a while back, and he and I ended up not working together because he wanted to charge people for coming to their homes when they had hauntings. And I told him, as a ghost hunter, I couldn't do that. But I didn't go against him doing it because of his work and my having worked in spiritualist churches. He was brought up with that belief that people don't respect what they don't pay for. So
it's, but I find that all the time. I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know what? People come to me for a reading. You know what? I don't care if you can afford it or not. I'm rock bottom. Rock bottom. And the reason why I'm rock bottom is the fact that we are trained to be of service. You know?
Right.
So, and half the time, people don't even pay me. You know, I don't really care. Investigations, I'm sorry. If somebody pays you or, you know, it's one thing to give a donation. It's another thing to give a set price. If you set a set price, that's obscene. And with me, again, what we're trained as right from the beginning is to be of service of those on this side and those who have passed. And if you go against that, we're talking, you know, a karmic bite in the ass, you know?
Don't worry. Don't get me wrong. I'll take gas money if the people offer it to me.
Of course. But you know what? I know people that went out there and charged people $600 for a one-night investigation.
See,
wow.
At the same time that I know that's wrong, I'm just wondering why I didn't get involved with that because I could really use the cash.
Why didn't we do that and have a TV show where we do get paid to go places, and then we wouldn't have to worry about it?
I never know with us.
That's, you know? That's it, guys. We're going to go out.
Because we all do radio shows free of charge. You know what I mean?
Really, you know?
That's it, though, guys. I think we need to go out and find somebody to pay us to do this. That's it. It's
Come on, Nathan. What network would be dumb enough to put us on television?
I don't know. But you know, I have to say, what network would be smart enough to put us on television? That's what I've got to say.
I agree.
But you know, Reverend, I hate to say this. We're going to have to wrap up in about 3 minutes. But again, can you give us your website one more time? Because I put the wrong website up because nobody sent me one. So that I'm
but
sure.
That's fine. My website is www.blackcatlounge.com.
And you know what? You've obviously been hitting the bottle too with us this night. So
no, I got to
listen. Man does not live by bread alone.
Now, I gotta say, Reverend Tim, when will Black Cat Lounge have the Ghostman Demon Hunter show on? That's what I'm.
Listen, guys, it's already in the works.
It's in the works, baby. Text in the mail. Watch the mouth.
You know, the funny thing is, Sean and I have been doing this now for over 2 years. For some reason, people actually come and listen to us. And I think, Sean, you and I can count on our hands how many people have actually asked us to be on their shows.
I can't count right now, but yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. You guys send me an email. Okay, blackcatlounge1@yahoo.com. I'll return it, and we're going to book you.
That would be awesome.
How's that?
Let's book it.
Mondays
at 9
o'clock. I'll book you guys. That's a promise.
Mondays at 9 o'clock?
Yep, that's when I'm on. Mondays at 9 o'clock on the Para X radio network. And I'm thinking during the summer. How's that, guys?
That would be awesome. That'd be awesome.
My show is all over the place. I go from paranormal investigators to Wiccans to Reiki healers, metaphysicians, to other people who are out there within this field. And that's what's so cool. And I'm going to tell you what your show rocks about. Your show is not afraid to go and laugh at what we do. Because too many people, I told you guys before, too many people walk around like they got duct tape on their butt. And they think that all this is so self-important. That's the one thing that spiritualism has taught me. You know what? We're just mirrors of ourselves. Take a good look at it. And if you can't laugh at yourself, you got something wrong there. So you guys do a great job. You guys really rock. I've listened to your show a couple times, and seriously, I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Reverend. Hey, Sean, I think we should do a round table here, and each of us, you, me, and Jason, get to ask one last question before we have to close for the night.
Okay, you start off, man.
All right, Reverend. This is my classic question. Now, I don't know if it's going to work for you, but we'll try it. You're investigating. Do you investigate cemeteries ever?
Yes, I have no problem doing it.
Okay, you're in the cemetery. You're investigating with everybody. You have to go pee. Where do you go?
I have no problem. You're talking to a guy that has a lot of backwoods experience. Anywhere, nobody sees me.
That's right.
I'm not afraid. And you got to understand, I work for a highway department during the day. I don't have any bathrooms that are close by. So an open door is always an open urinal.
That's it. Now, I got to say, Reverend Tim, I just wanted to specify, to clear up earlier when we were talking about ghosts. They can be happening. They can be disco. They can be crazy, right? And we can live with them. But there is that certain element every once in a while that I always say, such in life, such in death, man. You got axe murderers, rapists, child molesters, and you got the regular mailman, the school teacher, and the regular guys like us. I mean, you run into that element sometimes. So out of respect, I do understand that some people have to have things taken away from their home. There is people under attack. There is things going on. But I think a lot of the situations, we can learn to live with the dead. What do you think?
Exactly. And even in those extreme situations, you have to dissect what's going on in that specific location. What I have found, 9 out of 10 times, you have an addictive spirit. And an addictive spirit doesn't just mean that it's going to hang around drug users and alcoholics. You have junkies out there that are looking for fear. They're looking for anger. They're looking for hatred. They're looking for all this stuff so they can feed off. It's almost like a psychic vampire almost. And they're getting their kicks out of that. And that's what makes them stronger. So what do? They turn around and they're going to go and they're going to make their life, the people in this house's life, miserable. The only way out of that is education. Show these people what's going on. You have to turn around and you have to not be, you can't be afraid. You've got to go and you've got to be unified and you say, listen, this is the way it is. I don't care. Do what you got to do. But I don't care. You're not welcome here. I'm putting it up, and I'm not going to go and take this anymore.
Doesn't hurt to have Reverend Tim on speed
dial. Dude, I am like the Mr. Dr. Phil of the spirit world sometimes. That's because I don't take anything from a spirit. We were at an investigation in October that we were doing table tipping. The table kept pinning one of the ladies that were with us. Kept pinning it. I turned around and I finally stopped and I said, listen, that's enough. You keep it up. You're not welcome here. Go. The other mediums there, they looked at each other like, holy Christ, what's going on? What's wrong with this guy? Guess what? The spirit left. Another spirit took the place of that spirit that was contacting us through that table, and the woman was not pinned again. That is a minor way of doing it. But you have to be able to go, and you have to believe in it. And that's what the important thing is. And again, through the spiritualist religion, it's just like dealing with people. Sometimes you've got to be very, very strict, and sometimes you've got to mean it, and you've got to go, and you've got to be in control. And that's the number one thing. You've got to be in control in order to do this.
Paranormal bullies. That's what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Listen, guys. I've been known to wear Doc Martens in my life, so I'm not afraid of much.
Hey,
that's the way I treat the spirit world like I treat the human world. I give them respect when they earn respect. You don't go and you don't do something that is not respectful. You're not respectful. You're not welcome here. Get moving.
One of my favorite stories of Doc Martens is I used to have hair down to my back, the bottom of my back, and.
That's funny. I have hair coming up from the bottom of my back.
Well, sadly, so do I these days. But if you haven't noticed, I'm the oldest member of the team. But I had a great pair of Doc Martens, and the laces broke. So I had to find laces, and I found a pair of bright red laces in my grandmother's sewing kit. And I sewed them up through my Doc Martens.
You're scaring me now.
I sewed them up through my Doc Martens and put them in. Nobody ever said a word till I moved to Connecticut. First week in Connecticut, I'm at a place called the Black Duck in Connecticut. Somebody walks over and says, you know, you got a lot of nerve wearing those. What do you think you are, some kind of white supremacist? I looked at him and said, they came out of my grandmother's sewing kit. That kind of killed the whole conversation there. But
listen, I go and I exercise during my lunch. I'm wearing heavy-duty boots, I'm wearing jeans, and I'm wearing bright red suspenders, and I have a shaved head. I have people driving by going yelling Achtung out the window, so I know how you feel, brother.
Well, what I want to know is how did anybody see this mullet going down to the small of my back thinking I was a white supremacist, a skinhead? I just I didn't get it. But hey, Gowan, you still there?
I'm here.
Do you have a last question for the Reverend Timothy Shaw?
I don't. I don't really have a question. I was just kind of taking it all in.
Did we hit all the questions you were going to ask and we left you with nothing?
Yep.
Oh,
I got one, Big Tim.
You got one, brother. What is it?
I got it, man. If I go in on an investigation and there's a family that says they are under attack, because, you know, we hear more often than not nowadays that we are under demonic attack. What do you do, man? What happens there? Do you treat it as a traditional haunting, or do you treat it as, I better call in the priest?
Here's the bottom line. Before I call in, I have a friend who's a bishop, and he's also an exorcist, and he's been trained in this. Before I even call him up, I make sure that I have the right evidence. Now, in order to collect evidence, we're not talking a one-pop deal here. So many people think that they're going to go into a house or go into a location, one pop, and they're going to go and they're going to be able to solve the problem. Guess what? That's in fantasy land. Because what happens is when you introduce a different vibration into that house, such as investigators or whatever, you can upset the balance. I firmly believe that, again, because I believe everything is a frequency. So by upsetting that balance, you may not get anything for a day or two. But by return visits, and I know this for a fact, when I've worked haunted locations, the more I go to that location, the better evidence I get. So if that's the theory of it, well, then guess what you should do? And I hate to tell people this, and a lot of people can't do it, myself included. You have to camp in this place for about 5 days. Let the vibrations get used to you, and then see if it acts up. And that's how you have to do it. After that, if I feel that there's enough red flags and going on in there, such as improper touches, sexual assaults, if I feel that there's scratching and biting and nasty stuff like that, where it may be something that may be a little bit more than your normal, you know, Aunt Sally's in the house and passing wind as she's going by and you're thinking it's like etheric mist.
Well, paranormal fart, yeah.
Dude, we're going to go and we're gonna pass it on. The number one thing that paranormal investigators have to learn is the fact that you don't have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. But together, if you network correctly, you're going to find somebody that's going to be able to help. And the bottom line is, again, we go right back to the bottom line, which is being of service. You can't be of service if you're so egocentric that you're going to go and think you're going to solve every case. You've got to be able to go, present the evidence, weigh the evidence, go and see if you can dismiss the evidence. And when you have nothing left, and you, or you, if you have something that may be just a little bit questionable, you've got to be able, a big boy, you got to put your big boy pants on and say, you know, this may not be something that I can handle or my group can handle. And then you go and pass it off to the next person or group that has more experience in it. And that's why all this paranormal disunity is so disheartening to me, because of the fact that if people would work together, and let's just not say work together, let's just say respect each other, not care what anybody else is doing, you'd have that networking, just like we talked about the independents. We're able to go out there and just bring in everybody's expertise, and that's what you want. And that's how you would, that's how I would attack that situation. I mean, I'm not going to go and cut off the head of a chicken and dance around the fire half naked, you know? First of all,
I've done that, Reverend, and it's not all it's cut up to be. I said I've studied with just about everybody out there, and
it depends on what's in your cigars, man.
Now, I'll tell you, I've cut off the head of the chicken and danced around the fire half naked, but I've never cut off the head of the chicken and danced around the fire completely naked. I've only danced around the fire completely naked when there were no chickens involved. But
and believe me, I think there are some laws in some states that prohibit that.
Yeah, fortunately, Connecticut isn't one of them. But Achtun. But you know, Reverend, I've got like 90 more questions, but we're going to have to hold them for when we come on to the Black Cat Lounge, because we've got to wrap
it, man.
Up for
you
the
got
night.
It. And, seriously, drop me a line and I'll book you.
Sounds awesome.
You guys are a lot of fun, and that's what this is all about.
We try.
Thanks, Rev.
Hey, Sean. You know? Sean, Reverend, can you hang on the line while we wrap up for the evening?
You got it, my brother.
Jason.
Yeah?
You've been quiet. I wanted to make sure you were okay.
I'm eating tacos.
You're eating tacos? Are they tofu or chicken tacos?
They're bean burritos, actually.
I'm very impressed. Thank you. Sean, it's time for us to thank everybody for joining us tonight for the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
All right, guys. Reverend Tim Shaw, wow, what a powerhouse. And be sure to check out our website at www.ghostanddemon.com and log on our forums, because we really want to hear from you.
And don't forget, if you missed any part of this Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show or any Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, you can check out our archives at Planet Paranormal. Well, you will as soon as I get them up there. Podomatic, Podcast Alley, iTunes, Mediafly, Podbean, Blueberry, Podcast Pickle. We are also available on the Podfeed community, the Black Vault Radio Network, and Para X Radio. With that being said, join us next week when our guest will be Marla Brooks of the Stirring Cauldron. From the Stirring Cauldron. That silence that's so great on radio, Sean.
That's it, guys. Hey, this ain't no disco, folks. Don't go changing, Ghost Hunters. We won't. We love ya.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
So say good night to the bad guys.